Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Becky Vickers.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, good evening, Becky, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Oh, I'm very excited to have you. We're going all the way down to, I believe, she lives somewhere in Texas. So everyone, just hang on to your bootstraps because here we go. So Becky and I have, we chatted a little bit before the show today, and I think we need to learn a little bit about this gal. And let's maybe, Becky, why don't we start out with, whether it's paranormal or anything else related to the paranormal, how far back can you go? And telling us a little bit about where it began for you or when you might have started coming into your abilities. You choose which one, and then we'll just take it from there.
Well, growing up, talking about ghosts and paranormal stuff, of course, it was many years ago. It wasn't a thing for me. Like, it was just not any kind of conversation that we would have. It didn't mean that we didn't believe in ghosts or anything. It was just never, ever discussed. And when I was 16, I had a grandfather that I absolutely adored, like we all do. We love our grandparents. Yeah. And he had a triple bypass done at the time. And my mom, I had stayed home with my brothers. And my mom had called me from the hospital and she said, "Everything's great. Everything looks good. We'll see you in the morning." And so I was going to drive my brothers up to see him. And I'll refer to him as Nan. That's what I called him. Mm-hmm. And at some point during the night, I would say anywhere between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, my parents show up with my grandmother at the door. And I'm so confused by this. I'm like, why are they here? Why are they not back in Dallas with my grandfather? And they're sobbing. Mm-hmm. And she said he didn't make it. And I can't process this. Like, you called me, everything was wonderful, and now it's not. So, like, what happened? And she said the doctors even started crying when they came and said they absolutely had no explanation that his heart stopped.
Hmm.
So, I think I just went over the edge with a survivor's guilt that I didn't get to say goodbye. I should have went that night. I should have drove to Dallas. I should have, and now I didn't get the chance to say goodbye. And I think I just could not cope, as difficult as we all know it is to lose somebody. At 16, I absolutely refused. I mean, Kelly, it was just like over the top. No, I'm not accepting this. I refuse to accept this. No way. Mm-hmm. So I started reading anything I could that had to do with ghosts and how to communicate with the paranormal, how to talk to a loved one that's passed, all of that. I did this all in secret because my parents, I couldn't go to them and say, "Hey, let's go to the library and get a book about ghosts."
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it started, really, was just the refusal. Nope, I'm not going to accept this. There's got to be a way that I can still talk with him and that sort of thing. And it evolved from there. I mean, going to cemeteries, and mm-hmm. the more I read, the more fascinated I became with how to communicate with the dead, how to get evidence that they're still around and all of that kind of stuff. And so really for me, that that was the thing that started it all, was just refusing to accept death as it came to me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. A couple things come to my mind when I hear your story. The first thing that comes to my mind is a lot of people always report, and I can report this on my end. By the way, I was teaching 600 miles away in another state at the time when my dad had passed away. And, you know, you just can't get in the car and drive quickly to when someone may or may not, you know, when you don't know at that point when they're going to pass away. I think many of us can relate to that. And what happened in my case, and I want to ask you about this in your case, if you can recall anything. In my case, my screen started slow, and it's never done that in 14 years. My screen started to slowly, just very controlled rise, and it panicked my students. And they were pointing at the screen, and I turned around and I saw that, and I knew instinctively that was a signal from my dad that he was either passing or had passed. But you just can't turn around in front of a group of students as their college professor and go, yeah, my dad just died. You know, it puts you in such a predicament. But I had a lot of weird things going in there, but I want to, and he's visited me, by the way, and that's why I'm going to bring this back to you in a second. I have had the phone ring, and it was 000000 and all that, and I just knew instinctively it was him calling me. But we all know how pesty these scamming people are and these pests are these days.
Yes.
We don't answer our phone, right? And so I just said, I'm sorry, I can't answer this phone. The other thing is, he had a very distinct barn smell, because I grew up on a farm, and it was a very distinct smell. And this was still 600 miles away and a few months later. So let me whip this back to you. Do you recall at all when that happened, whether or not your grandfather made an attempt to visit you in any way? Can you think back a little bit? Do you think not, or what do you recall?
You know, as far as the actual night that he passed, I was at home with my brothers, my two younger brothers. I don't think he attempted to communicate with me at night at that particular day, but I think me not being there was deliberate. I think that was planned on his part. I think because we've all, you know, struggles in life, we got to do this and do that, and financial trouble or relationship trouble, whatever it is. And I think he knew at the time he could help me more in the afterlife than he could being present. And it sounds weird, but because I was so focused on ghost and spiritualism and all of this stuff, man, I had a divorce. I struggled financially in the beginning and things like this, but I never got down. You know how people will let things get to them. They're drinking a lot or doing drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I was always so focused on reading, I think that was his way of, this is how we're going to get you through these rough times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he had a purpose on going that night, but as far as actually having some sort of a sign, I don't think there was. But again, I, in my heart of hearts, I believe that was planned on his part that I not be there.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, by the way, can relate to the fact, including myself, that I was the only one in my family that couldn't get there, although some did arrive after it had happened. But the thing is that my dad, I think, also knew that I wasn't going to, like you, sit back and just accept the fact that, well, this is some people believe this is a done deal. This was not a done deal. I had at least three visits from him. Actually four. One happened in my house here recently. where his pitcher got tipped over, and there's no breeze or anything, and it's never ever fallen over in 5 years. But the thing is, it's like, do I believe that that was him? Yes, for various reasons. And in your case, your grandfather probably knew enough to know that you would figure this out in a different way. Yeah. Plus, there's a lot of people that leave the room, and a lot of you can relate to this right now. You've left the room for 5-10 minutes, and then they were kind of fine one moment, and then you come back, and then they made the decision to pass. And some of them just do not want you to see them passing. That's just how it is, you know. So, and you know, you're probably in a situation yourself at that time where it was just like one more layer of trauma being added on to, if you want to call it, it's a form of trauma when you lose somebody. It just depends on how intensely it hits you. So the other thing you had brought up, which I thought was kind of interesting as we were sitting here chatting, and I can't remember right off the bat, but would you say that, it's about the parental reaction. That's what I wanted to get at. So, you know, when I was growing up too, there was no books that I could go to find information. There was no internet to go and hunt for information on this stuff. We just kind of went with the time and kind of learned from other people or started processing things. And I don't know about you, Becky, but I grew up rather religious. And so, you know, basically my religion and spirituality only meant from a religious standpoint. I hadn't started developing other perspectives until I started having more experiences. How about you? It sounds like you grew up kind of the same way.
Yeah. Actually, mine is more, we weren't extremely spiritual. Like, we lived way out in the country. And so actually going to church was not a regular thing that we did. We believed in God and all of this, but any sort of conversation that would entail the afterlife and dealing with that, I think would not have gone well with my family. Mm-hmm. I just think they would have been like, we're not talking about this. It would be shut down.
Yep.
It's just not a normal thing you would discuss, especially with your 16-year-old daughter who is like, just all of a sudden, I need a tape recorder, like the old cassette recorders. I need to go to a cemetery. I did all of that, not telling them. But as far as being religious and that aspect of it, because it is such a conflict, I don't think that would have been it. I think I would just would have been shut down of, no, that's not a thing. We're not talking about that. You need to not think about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I grew up. And then there was always a demonic twist to it too. You can't, you know, that's not real. That doesn't happen. No, that's all made up in your imagination. I went through many, many periods of things that just could not be explained literally. And yet it was shut down every single time to the point where it got so bad.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I should ask you that. Did you ever have, when do you think now, you know, when you go through something like kind of traumatic, sometimes things have a tendency to build on that. And then you have a tendency to maybe, react to that in various ways. Did you find your sensitivities developing at any point in time? What do you think about that?
No, Dr. Kelly, I agree. I think once you open this door to belief or you start to get knowledge of how things are working or what might work, man, I think that just opens the floodgates of what's going to come to you. And it, after I started reading and trying to do, you know, the little seance in my bedroom, just talking out loud with the little recorder and actually playing it back and hearing something that you know is not there, man, I'm just like, first I was very scared about it. I'm like, oh my God, you can really do this. Like, this can really happen between you. And you do get to the point when you're first starting out, it's like, do I want to take this any further? You do wonder, am I going to get into the demons? Because I thought that was a great point you made, that if you had brought things up back in our day growing up, mm-hmm. Everything was tied to demons and it's going to be a bad thing and this is a horrible thing and you should not do this and blah, blah, blah. I thought that was an excellent point you made with that.
Yeah.
I mean, just my sensitivity now, I think, is super sharp. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just years and years and years of paying attention, opening the doors wider that, you know, and like you and I were talking about earlier, also knowing how to shut that door when it's time, you know, having the talk with your haunted objects, you know, cut that crap out. Mm-hmm. So.
You know, the one thing I always wonder about when I talk with people is when I went through school, I was very, very ultra sensitive to the point where I had given myself an ulcer at times because I was just so overly anxious all the time. Yeah. But one of the things that happened to me when I was growing up between the age of maybe, 16 to maybe 18, and I was down in my kind of like a basement room. One of the things that I couldn't figure out in and of myself was I kept having these terrible visions of something that looked like the devil, the red devil laughing at me all the time. Yeah. And I don't know, now that I think back to to my childhood property, there is no doubt in my mind in any way that whatever happened, now I'm not saying something bad happened. I know the people that lived there before we took possession of it, they were just a regular couple, but we don't know how angry they were. We don't know what kind of issues they had. We don't know any of that. And we don't know how much of that was embedded in the walls of that structure to affect the individual coming in next. And for some reason, I had picked up on something that, I don't know, just kept capitalizing on me, or I picked it up somewhere. So I was having these terrible, terrible visions all the time happening to me. I don't know. What are your thoughts about, you know, people always say, yeah, try to cleanse your environment before you go to a new home. And I always discounted it. Yeah. Oh, whatever. You know, I'm going into this house. Oh, what could be in here? Right. Have you ever found that, a lot of negative energy or a lot of explosive energy from people living in a structure can actually remain? What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. You know, it's negative energy does it. How can I explain it? Negative energy grows faster than positive. It's, you put a bunch of negative people in a room just spouting out horrible things or all of this stuff, man, the atmosphere, the everything about you, it changes in that room and it's all negative. You start to feel sick. You start to get lightheaded, all of that sort of stuff. So I 100% believe previous people like you're talking about that might have lived in your home and maybe the husband was abusive or the wife was abusive. That's residual energies that stay, you know. I've had to cleanse my house a few times, you know, that things would happen that I don't know how negative, but they were too much for me to handle. Like, okay, you know, all the water in my house, I have a 2-story house and I have like 3 or 4 bathrooms. All the water came on one night at the same time, full force, the kitchen, the bathrooms, the showers. That was too much. I'm like, okay, yeah, no. That's freaking me out. We can't do that.
But, that's interesting.
I helped a couple one time that the night that I went to help them at their house to see what was going on, the lady confesses to me the night before that she and her husband and children, young teenagers, had this huge blow up and the son had gotten a knife and tried to stab the dad.
Oh my.
Now, this was literally the night before I got there. So I had to sit down with the family and let them know, look, whatever y'all are pissed off about, kids, you're mad at your parents because they won't let you stay out late. Mom and dad, you're mad at the kids because they won't clean up. Whatever ever this is, y'all have got to get on the same page. You have one night, you cuss it out, you get over it, you move past it. Because what's happening in this house is affecting you, and it's going to get way worse from what you're telling me of all of the negative stuff. 100%, I believe all that negative energy from the mom continued just to tell me all of these different things. The son would not come home on time and the dad would get irate. Mm-hmm. All of that, I think, was affecting this family severely, mm-hmm. severely. Mm-hmm. So I hope, you know, I talked to her probably a couple months later. She said everything had calmed down, but I'm like, you guys have got to clear this air. Man, this is bad. And it's going to get really bad if you've gotten to the point where you tried to stab your dad. Like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, you know.
Did you ever find anyone in school when you were growing up that might have shared with you that they were familiar with some experiences that you might have been having yourself or not really?
Not really. But again, at the time, even in school, like nowadays, everything you hear is the kids are all into the paranormal and Ouija boards and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. My day growing up, the Ouija board was just coming out where the kids would have these parties and try to do Ouija board stuff. But I don't recall really confiding in anybody because, again, my parents, even though we weren't go to church every Sunday, I just was afraid that my parents would find out that I'm reading all of this stuff. And for the longest time, even as an adult, when I was really going around to different locations, my dad thought that I was doing witchcraft. Mm-hmm. He couldn't make the differentiation or whatever it's called. Right. And I'm like, I've never placed a spell. I don't know how to place a spell, Dad. It's not has anything to do with witchcraft. No. But that just tells, you know, our generation of what they thought about ghosts and stuff. Like, it's absolutely no. And I didn't confide in a lot of friends about what I was doing. Eventually, maybe after when I got a little older in high school, you know, I would tell friends to come with me to the cemeteries. And of course, they would freak out when things would move. And this, you know, we would actually get, you know, proof or evidence that something was going on. That would freak them out a little bit. But did you have somebody that you could confide in and they were having the same kind of experiences?
So what happened back in my day in high school was one of the things that as I grew into getting my degrees, I began to learn through my master's and my PhD work that a lot of times our judgment and our faculties up there don't really develop fully till around age 28 to 32. And then unfortunately, after that point, I hate to say it, but your brain cells start to die. But anyway, putting that depression behind all of us.
Thanks for making me feel good.
I know. Here I am, folks. I'm here to depress you tonight. And so, but one thing that happened, which was really interesting, and you just brought it up, the Ouija board. Okay, so back in my day, it was the Ouija board had just come out, or maybe it had been out for a long time, but the learning of the Ouija board was something that I grew to learn, not play with it. I've never played with the Ouija board, but I had two teachers and a couple of students. The couple of students that were like in 11th grade played with this Ouija board, used this Ouija board to try to make contact with something. And two teachers came forward and they're very well respected. And so they actually went to the teacher's home with this Ouija board. There's four of them. I actually had a sketch drawn out of them in my book. And they were asking questions about who it was that was in that house because they were having occurrences. Okay. What they found out, which was very interesting, was that it spelled out an address and it spelled out a gal's age, a five-year-old girl, New York, and an address that she was dying. That she was dying, yeah. But you see, though, this is very rare that you would get something this detailed. And so they wrote a letter to this address, and they got a response back about a month or so after that that said, and I quote, "We don't know who you are or what business it is of yours, but yes, we do have a five-year-old gal passing away, or she passed away from our household." Now, why is that significant? So, like your fascination, by the way, I also had a fascination all of a sudden, because two teachers that were very held in high regard actually printed in our school paper that story. And they told the story also of, this is what I also learned about, can ghosts taste? Okay. So they also wrote that during their Ouija board session, the apparition there asked if it could have popcorn with butter on it. And so one of the participants went to the kitchen. There was no butter, but they made the popcorn. And then when they got back, the apparition through the Ouija board swore at them and said, "I wanted butter, damn it." Okay. And so it was very interesting how I thought, wow, ghosts can actually taste. And so, you know, these things were always popping into my head. What would you say was one of your most significant occurrences or experiences? Because I've had hundreds. I have that you can recall that you said to yourself, other than the fact that that tape recorder had something on the tape that you heard, was there anything that you saw, like something flying across the room, or something appearing to you, or whatever? What do you think was your most significant that you can remember?
Well, one of the things as far as physically moving, I had back in the day, stuffed animals was all the rage. Yeah. Everybody wanted stuffed animals. The more the merrier on the beds and all of that good stuff.
Yep.
And I had a favorite little animal, and it was a big tiger, you know, 3 foot, you know, big tiger that you can snuggle with. And I had put it in the top of my closet because I'd got new animals, and so I'm kind of shifting everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember laying in the bed one night, and again, I know people are going to go, "Oh, it just fell," but it fell from the back of the closet out of the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of freaked me out, even young, thinking, "Oh my gosh, how did that happen? Like, that was way in the back of the closet. It would not fall." Like, so that was one of my very first experiences of, "Oh crap," mm-hmm. It can move things, right? But one of the most significant to me, as far as knowing, okay, this stuff is real, had to do with a visitation in a dream from my nan. It was the most unusual, but yet best, worst kind of thing. I was in my dream. I had never had any visions or any dreams about my grandfather ever. Like, this was probably, I would say, 3 or 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And one night in my dream, he came to me and he said, "Beck, it's okay. Stop feeling guilty."
Mm-hmm.
And it was so lifelike. Anybody that's had a visitation knows, take those for what they are. Don't dismiss them. They're real. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying, "Take my hand and then tell me bye," which was weird in my head, even thinking, "I don't want to say bye. I don't want to say bye." But mm-hmm. So we held hands, and even in my sleep, I could feel the warmth of his palm in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I even remember waking up and looking around, because it scared me so bad, I thought somebody was in the room because I could feel the warmth of the hand in my palm.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my gosh, Kelly, that did not go away for about a week. Mm-hmm. I would drive to work and I could feel this warmth. And I'm like, this, what is this? This is something big. This is not made up in my brain, mm-hmm. a make-believe. I think for me, it was just his way of saying, again, the guilt and stop being obsessive about not saying goodbye. Here, hold my hand. Say goodbye if that's, I don't need it, but you need it. So mm-hmm. say goodbye if that's what you need to do. But just to have that warmth of his hand and mine for a week, it was shocking. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable to me. So even though it doesn't sound that big to anybody, it was for me. It was an absolute, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was from him. This is him. And it was like a switch. I quit feeling guilty about it. I still continued on with the paranormal, but the guilt of not saying goodbye to him was gone. Mm-hmm. It was gone.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things have you experienced for yourself, or not even yourself, or what other people have told you? We'll open it up a little bit here. As to the types of signs that they have seen and what they believe that sign meant.
This is one of my favorite subjects, is to talk about signs.
Oh,
I could
good.
Talk for days about signs. I love signs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I love to do when I'm talking with somebody, and here's my word of advice to people. When you're grieving and the pain is so bad and you don't want to get up in the mornings and you don't give a damn about anything, you could care less if the sun comes up or if it goes down, you don't care. Sometimes you're just praying so hard for a sign. I need a sign. I need a sign. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think you need to understand you don't get those signs when you're in that state, because it can make things worse. The longing. Now you've gotten a little tidbit of something that you're hanging on to, and now the longing is even worse because mm-hmm. you just want more and more, and you're just continue to be sad if you don't get it. Right. So I think you get your signs when your loved one feels you're strong enough. Exactly what you said. For 3 years, I've carried around that guilt of my grandfather, and maybe I wouldn't have accepted that visitation in any prior years or whatever, yep. except at that time. He's like, okay, she's going to understand and she's going to accept this for what it is, instead of trying to rationalize, it was a dream and that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
But signs, oh my gosh. Like you said, everybody talks about pennies, but one of my favorite things to tell people is, if you need a sign and you're looking for a sign, pick something outrageous. Pick an orange cow. Don't make it anything normal.
Yep.
Pick an orange cow that, you know, maybe you need a sign that your loved ones are okay. Show me an orange cow. Because what that does is, when you get your sign, when you see that orange cow, and you may not see an orange cow in a field, but you might see it on TV. You might see it in a magazine. You might see it on a sweater.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see whatever sign you've asked for. And when you get it, don't dismiss that. You ask for an orange cow. Here's an orange cow in this commercial for, you know, cow feed or whatever it might be in a cartoon. Here you go. Here it is. You ask and you receive. And so I think people who really are looking for signs, ask for to see something really crazy, you know, a butterfly flying upside down or something. I'm trying to think of course, the cardinal. Everybody knows that that's supposed to be your loved ones checking in on you or whatever.
What do you think about, here's something that was unusual. And actually my husband's father passed away shy of Thanksgiving several years ago. And we were in the nursing home, walking his mother back to her room, and there was a butterfly. Now, I know what people are going to say right now. Oh, nursing homes are known to have birds and butterflies. No, this nursing home didn't have no birds. They had no butterflies. This was in the middle of winter. Okay. And this was a full full grown, large butterfly. And it was actually in a door frame at the bottom. And you know how butterflies oh, wow. just open and close and open and close their wings, open and close. It was just sitting yes. there, opening and close their wings. And it was right down at the bottom of this door frame where we all had to pass through to continue on, you know, our journey to bring her back. Now, nobody stepped on it. Nobody went, oh, whoosh, or no one said, oh, look it, there's a butterfly. We saw the butterfly. We left the butterfly alone. And it was just as calm as could be, just sitting there, opening and closing its wings. And so when we got through the frame, I don't want to say we made a joke, but we kind of, you know, was, you have to make the moment a little bit light. Oh, that must have been, you know, my husband's father, right? And he was just there greeting all of us yeah. as we were going through that frame. Here's another crazy one for you. So my dad was big into pheasant hunting. And so my sister went to the store, and when she came out, she said there was a pheasant feather lying next to her car door. And she said, I don't know how that got there. I don't know where that came from. But she said, I believe Dad was visiting me today because of this pheasant feather, right? This is what you're talking about when you're talking about unusual situations. Yeah. So has another one come to your mind at all?
Yes. Your feather story. I think that you can ask for signs for all kinds of things. Like if you're going to make a big career move and you're struggling with that decision, ask for, you know, guidance with that, you know, your guardian angels or your loved ones. And I can't remember what I was struggling with, but I was asking for a sign, you know, is this, should I take this move or whatever it was? And oh my gosh, Kelly, I got in my car and there's a white feather in my passenger car seat. Okay, to my recollection, I didn't take a bird with me to town or from work at any time did I have a bird in my car. Mm-hmm. But it was just an overwhelming, here you go. This is what you should do. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, when I get those sort of signs, I have a box that I keep all of this stuff in. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty weird and crazy to me that I would have this feather sitting mm-hmm. in my passenger side when I know there's no way there was a bird in my car.
Have you ever had yet anything appear or disappear on you and then reappear? Have you had that experience yet?
Oh, Lord, yes. Many times. I like to read at night, and so I'll use reading glasses, and I like to tell the story. You know, I was going to go to the restroom, so I always, you know how you're a creature of habit, so I turn my book over and lay my glasses on top of my book. I go to the restroom, couldn't been in there 2 or 3 minutes. My bathroom is close to my bedroom, and I come back, and my glasses are missing. And so I'm like looking. I'm like over the top, so confused. Where in the heck are my glasses? And so I can't find them. I've flipped the covers. I've did everything. So I go into the kitchen to get me a glass of water. And there on my kitchen table, which I have not been, was the glasses. And so you kind of got to laugh. I know once, like you and I, once we are used to this and it happens, I'm like, oh yeah, that was not funny. Did y'all see how long I looked for those glasses in my bedroom? Like, what? Really? Come on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's amazing when things reappear or disappear or something that you know you didn't buy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't know, just crazy stuff. Yeah, I love it. I love all that.
Yeah, I can give you two interesting ones here. So the first one was in house number three. I'm in house number four right now because we had moved, right? And I had just left my office and upstairs, and I went down to talk to my husband. I said, I got to get going because I have to be at wherever, you know, let's say the post office closes in, you know, less than a half hour, and I got to get there. So I rushed back up the steps, and I couldn't find. I wear sometimes one of those kind of like they're like a passport holder or kind of a crossbody mm-hmm. bag. And I couldn't find my purse. And I am not one. Anyone who knows me knows I don't lose anything. It's just like, if I lose something, that's like unbelievable, right? And I looked and I said, well, where on earth is my purse? And I said, I can't find my purse. I got to get to the post office. I was in one of those anxiety moments, you know? So I screamed down the stairs and I said, have you seen my purse? I said, I don't know where it is. And so my husband and I, we went, literally tore the place apart looking for it. And then I found it. So I put a blanket on the seat of my office chair, and the string of my purse was just barely peeking out from underneath this blanket that was over my office chair. Yeah, and I have a sketch drawn of that too in my book of me going like, how on earth did it ever get underneath my chair? You know, but the string was just, you know, just barely peeking out. So it was almost like a practical joke in a way, but yet just enough to, and I grabbed it and I looked at him and I said, I have no idea how this got under here. And it's just him and me. We don't have animals or anything in our house. It was just him and me. And he doesn't come into my office, you know, unless he's telling me something simple and then he leaves. So that was my first, there are probably more. Yes. Very, very interesting one. But here's another one for
That's
you.
That's a good one.
So it's called the missing pill. Okay. So you know how you sometimes take your pill and you miss your mouth and it goes flying across halfway across the room? That's me.
Yeah, I've done that.
Every time. Yeah, it's even more fun in the morning. You know, it's just like, where, put it down your nose or something. So here I am taking a pill, right? And I miss. And I'm like, well, where the heck did that pill go? And it was colorful enough where I could see it, right? And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to waste that pill. These pills are expensive. I don't want to, what the heck did that happen? So I start searching for the pill, right? And so anyway, long story short, and this brings me to a second pill story too. Long story short, it showed up 2 months later on top of my bedding when I went to the take a shower, came back, and my bedding was, you know, right next to the pillow, and it was just sitting there so nicely, like, were you looking for me kind of thing. And I looked at it and I said, this is impossible. I've rolled around in this bed, I've, you know, kicked up the covers, done this and all that, and here it is just nicely sitting there for me. But that also happened with my brother's pill as well. He also lost a pill. And then I found it, believe it or not, underneath, like, you know how you put some things out and you just lay them out on the bed and in another room or something like that. And I had a book or something just laying on top of where this was at. I picked up the book and there was his pill. And it was the same type of thing. So I have something in this house that has a fascination with pills for some reason. So I don't know. What have you had anything that, other than your glasses, have you had anything else happen to you that has gone and then reappeared somewhere else?
I got a pill story for you. I ordered off of eBay. I'm very into old books that people have written in, like, you know, books from the 1800s, but maybe they put someone has written to Mary from John.
Yeah.
I love when there is an actual writing in the book or a letter from somebody in the 1800s. That energy, that creative energy of how they felt at the time. Were they sad? Were they happy when they wrote those words? I'm just big into that. And I had ordered a restraining order. It sounds weird, but here's my weird side, people. A restraining order from an asylum that was charging like $5 to give this patient some medication and restrain them. But it was a handwritten order. Yeah. So it came in. I'm super excited. I'm like, oh my God, I love this. It's so cool. And so I laid it beside my bed. And like you talking about taking pills, I take a little pill at night and a couple of them, and I had opened my little dresser drawer to get the pills out, but I hadn't done that yet. You know, your normal routine, however you open them out. I get mine out and I lay it on the side of the bed till I'm ready to go to sleep. And I take it and then it's all good.
Yeah.
But I had the letter laying beside my bed, this order from an asylum. And I went about my business, changed in my PJs or whatever. And I came back and my little pills, two, not one, two, were on top of the letter. Like out of the bottle, on top of the letter. I freaked out. Of course, when stuff like that, I don't know about you, Kelly, but I take pictures. I'm like, oh no, nobody's going to believe me, but I'm going to remember that this happened exactly like this.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so cool because the letter was about giving this patient his pills.
Oh, interesting.
And so my pills are laying on top. It's like, oh, that's not an everyday occurrence right there. So yeah, there's my pill story. I didn't miss my mouth, but
yeah. Did you miss your mouth? I mean,
I have done it.
And then it just all of a sudden magically disappears through the portal in your room. Taste it and they're like, you know, I don't like this pill. I think I'll just give it back. And so they already licked it. You might as well just have it, whatever you were. But yeah, I did look at the pill now that this is no joke. I did look at that pill, but it might have been when I missed my mouth. It might have gotten wet from whatever and then flown off into La La Land.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't necessarily pristine, but I love that story, what you just said. I think it's just classic how you can have something and then hear these two pills on top of this letter that's talking about medication and taking it and all that. See, stuff like that to me, it's like you just want to tell somebody, right? And then they sit there, they want to lock you up in a loony bin. And that seems to be the big thing is like, and the thing is there's so much that goes on when you live a paranormal world or you are open enough where we call it now, or at least I'm calling it now, or I got this from a guest. I need to give her the credit. She calls it an invitation to awareness, which basically means, once you go through something, and then they think, okay, you're ready for some more, then some more will come to you. And like you and like myself, we're open. Somehow you just keep opening up like a flower and all this other stuff keeps happening. But the problem is our flower keeps opening and everybody else's stays closed, right? So it's really hard to talk about this stuff with people unless you're like-minded, because you can't convince a skeptic of anything. They'll think you've walked off the deep end, you know. But I love talking and share these stories because I've been there. So it's easy for me to say, that's believable. It's not crazy to me. It's happened. Yeah, it's something. Which brings us to this book that you've written, and then we might we'll talk a little bit about that book, and then we still have a little bit of time before we have to come to a close. But you had you've written a book. Give us the name of that book and what inspired you to write that book.
The name of the book is The Secrets to Goatman's Bridge, and the bridge is actually in Denton, Texas. And I want to thank you for the question. Your question is, what inspired me to write the book? No one's ever asked me that before. They've asked me what the book is about and the spirits in the book, but nobody has ever asked me what had inspired me. So I appreciate that question. The spirits down at this bridge inspired me to write the book.
Okay.
You know, with folklore, there's a million different tales. There's a million different stories. And I had really, really had a lot of experiences at this bridge, some good, some bad, not all good. There's a lot of dark stuff there, but there's also a lot of really good stuff. There's a lot of children's spirits there, and I love communicating with the spirits of children. They're just so open and free, and you can feel them touch your hair and this sort of thing. And I think after going there, I get really protective of the space. Because, as you know, to me, there might as well be living people.
Yeah.
So I think I wanted to write the book for them to have tell some of their stories. That there used to be an old town at this bridge with a lot of citizens, and a lot of the spirits at the bridge are actual once citizens of this town that was local by the bridge. And so I just felt compelled to tell their stories of why maybe they're there. And a lot of things that happened out there that maybe people don't know that are actually historical. Mm-hmm. But thank you for asking that. I mean, because I really was compelled by the spirits to, like, somebody needs to tell our story. Somebody needs to put it in writings.
You think that something was channeling you through your intuition to write that book? That's my question.
Absolutely. Like you, I'm sure when you're writing your murder mystery book, you have the visions in your head.
Yep.
And I think the visions come from, you know, the spirits. That how else can they get their message to you other than, like you said, being very quiet and being very open to receiving these messages? And they come mental visions sometimes. And yeah, I think the more I got into it, the more I think the spirits would let me know, hey, don't forget this part.
Right.
Don't forget, you know, that this family had 14 children and they were very well liked. And don't forget that they, you know, several of the children passed away very young age for no reason, just not medication. And I think they just was like, tell them this, tell them that, tell them this. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of great fun. It's like, oh yeah, okay, let me see what I can find out about that. And let me go to the library and let me go to the historical society and let me see. Mm-hmm. So yeah, channeling, absolutely, I think.
What kind of abilities do you think that you have? Because you've expanded and opened up like a flower over time. And what kinds can you recognize?
You know, I think I am I just consider myself a sensitive. Mm-hmm. I think I'm very sensitive to perceiving visually, you know, that there's somebody in this room and it's a lady in a blue dress. Mm-hmm. And also just the feelings of that you get, the emotion, you know, sometimes you can go to different locations or even just going and meeting somebody new for the first time. Mm-hmm. And man, you can just all of a sudden it's like this person on the surface is smiling, but is really in a lot of pain. And mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm really good at picking up on that and the spirits, their emotional state. I can't per se, like how you were talking about calling people in. I'm not a psychic that can say, you know, Jane Doe, come in for this person. But I think I'm really good at opening the lines of communication between people. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can sit with somebody that needs a message and kind of be the mediator kind mm-hmm. Of like, you ask the questions, but if I pick up on the message, I'm going to relay that to you.
Yeah.
But the message needs to come to you. So, you know, I want to say, I don't know. I just think I'm really strong sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just able to pick up what happened in a room. Oh my gosh, you know, there was a little girl tortured here. I can feel it. I know that happened. That mm-hmm. sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I haven't, that I'm not good at yet sometimes is closing it up and then opening it up and closing it up, because I seem to be, I don't know, I just kind of go with the punches and the flow. And when things happen,
right.
they happen. But I have never really learned how to say, stop, you know, I don't want to feel this anymore kind of thing. Have you been in a situation where you just want to put up a little bit of a bar in front of you and go, you know what, I'm done. I'm tapped out for the day. I really need just to, you know, chill out here. Have you ever been in those situations at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is hard. And I don't know that I'm good at it either, quite honestly. Especially like if we go to an investigation or help a resident out with some issues, you know, I'm drained and I'm exhausted and maybe I just want to shut that door. But the problem with opening the door is it is hard to shut.
Yep.
And you do have to learn. I think you do have to learn to say enough, because I can go to those places and be completely drained because I've felt things or seen things and I come home and I'm exhausted and
yep.
I want to go straight to sleep.
Yep.
But I don't. Again, I'm still like, oh no, you know, I think this might have happened there. Oh no, I think that went down and I didn't notice it at the time, but now I know what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm good at that either.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of my special memories is I went to a paranormal conference, and we went down into a basement of an old hotel, and there was several people that I didn't know. You know, we were all sitting in this room trying to communicate with the spirits, and all of the sudden, and it may happen for you too, Kelly, like you just can't help it. You don't want to say things out loud, but the spirit is like, loud, say it.
Yes.
And there's a lady sitting across from me, and I just blurted it out. And I didn't want to blurt it out, but, you know, I couldn't help it. The spirit's like, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just looked at her and I said, did somebody recently pass away? And man, she is shutting me down. She's blowing me off. Like, who are you? I don't know you, and you don't know anything about me.
Right.
And she just kind of, you know, real sternly said, yes. Mm-hmm. And like, she doesn't want to give me anything or whatever. And I said, okay, I know you don't know me, and I apologize in advance for this, but there's a really tall man standing beside you, and he's got his hand on your shoulder, and he's saying really loud, tell her to take the job that she loves. Don't follow the money, follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really, she just kind of looks at me like, again, mm-hmm. who are you? You don't know crap. And you're just some crazy lady saying this stuff.
Yeah.
But the lady sitting next to her taps her on her leg and mm-hmm. says, tell her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lady says, it's my brother. My brother passed away last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow. So what is it with the job? Because he's saying, follow your heart, not the money. And mm-hmm. she said, yes, I'm about to switch jobs or whatever. And then I asked her out loud in front of the people, I said, there's really something very personal that I need to bring up, but I need you to say it's okay because it's personal and we're in this big group. And mm-hmm. and she kind of starts, now she's bringing down her walls a little bit with
mm-hmm.
me,
mm-hmm.
and she says, it's okay. And I said, the suicide was an accident. The overdose was an accident. And she just burst out. And then, so now she's kind of believing what I'm saying. And I don't have any way of knowing this is going to happen. I don't know this lady, but I see this spirit who's telling me these things and I'm saying them out loud. And so she cries and she said, we've toyed with that. Was it an accident? Was it not? And I said, he says it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, he says he's done. Like, he's done. He doesn't want to talk in front of all these people anymore,
right,
in a funny way. And he just is tapping you on your shoulder and says, it's all good. But he's done talking in front of all these girls.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that's exactly what he would have said.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the conference, she finds me outside and I apologize. I said, I'm so sorry. I just felt this guy beside you is saying really loud, say this. And she was like telling me about the job situation. She's trying to decide which job to take, and that they had not mentioned her brother's name in a year since the passing.
Mm-hmm.
They had not brought his name up one single time because mm-hmm. she was mad about it, a little bit upset with him over it. And she said, until today. And we talked about him today. And she said, so that was really amazing that you told me that. And man, she and I have been like so connected, like our souls have bonded. And she'll reach out to me every once in a while and just check in, and I'll check in with her. But so something I had no control over, I'm like I'm sure you have. Sometimes it just comes and you don't want to be the weird person and everybody goes, oh, you're not a psychic. You know, you don't have any ability. But yet, you know, in your heart, this has to go down this way. I have to say it out loud. She shuts me down. Okay, I won't say another word. And she did, man, at first, boy, she was like, I don't know you, lady. Don't ask me anything. Don't, you know, I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the major experiences and connections, soul connections that I found, like, oh, crap, I might have something here. Like, that worked. I'm glad I was right on that.
I'd like you to tell people where they can find you, read about you, how to get a hold of your book, any websites, and we'll make sure we get this at the end of the show program.
Yeah, thanks. You can find me on Facebook, Becky Vickers, or I have another Facebook account, Bex Ghost Hunters, B-E-C-K-S, like Bex. That was stupid. I spelt it and then said like Bex, but it's like Becky, but Bex. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I have a blog that's BexGhostHunters.com. Mm-hmm. And I have Instagram. I suck at Instagram. Do not judge me. I'm barely learning TikTok. And I do Twitter, the old Twitter. I don't do a lot. So y'all don't judge me. I'm a Facebook girl. I mostly post everything going on with me there. Mm-hmm. So, and you can get the book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. And again, the book title is
The Secrets to Goatman's Bridge.
And we thank you so much,
yeah,
for being on the show. And again, we'll have to have you back in the future. Thank you so much.